Welcome to Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And here we are. We're finally going to do it. It's Italy versus France.
It's the war of the two countries.
Yeah, and it's not food. It's not even the World Cup or the European Cup
that. Right, it's just...
It's a war of minds.
Ours.
Well, our versions of, right? I mean, that's neither
well,
of us is French or Italian.
We talked about who was
going
to do French and who was going to do Italian. It was pretty clear.
It was pretty easy because that we've had versions of this conversation for a long time where it's, you know, like how do you approach something and what is the tradition that you like to work in? How do I approach something in food and what is the tradition I like to work in? You know, that.
Well, and of course, in the end, we like both places very, very much. So it's just, but you're right, it is approach because obviously having graduated from the Culinary Institute of America, and at the time that I went there, everything there was based on Escoffier's principles. So, you know, that was the foundation. That was the, Le Guide was the Bible that it still is. But that was the foundation of everything your education.
That's the first principle. I call that the French fear factor. People are afraid to not have the French technique, the French endorsement. So while Cindy argues the one side on this program, she's going to be wearing a terrific French mustache.
I am not. Oh, gosh. How about a beret instead?
This is radio.
And a scarf.
Anyway.
How about some French perfume? That's what I'll be wearing during this interview. Okay.
So,
a smile on my face as well. Because I love to talk about French food.
Well, no, I know that you do. And yes, I love French food as well. But it's easy for me to think of you being joyful. I'll start the other side with you being joyful and naming dishes in Italian restaurants, small Italian restaurants, where you've been foolishly happy. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
You know, there is French food is, to me, that's I shouldn't start this negatively, but I don't think it's negative. But it's food for the evening. It's food for nighttime. It's food for everything is prepared and dolled up, and you have the perfume, and you have Marie Antoinette's gown, and you have all of the, you know, posh and over-decorated things going on.
Oh, boy.
Right? and these burning lights and all this sort of business, you think of
that. All right, you're painting quite a picture there, Tony Foreman.
In Italian food, you think of the sunshine. You think of, I mean, that's, you think of being more likely outside. Mm-hmm. Than not.
Tablecloths blowing in the
wind.
And
more likely, it's a meal that takes all afternoon, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I begin with offering you sunshine versus nighttime. Your turn.
Wow. What are you trying to say? Okay, so when it comes to these two worlds, what's the history difference? What's the real difference in the two cooking?
The Italians taught the French to cook, and the French messed it up.
That's, oh boy. Oh, boy. All right. Now there are going to be people punching the radios.
There were no forks in France. Mm-hmm. And there were no accomplished cooks in France until the French king married an Italian queen.
That lady.
Mm-hmm. Who brought her cooks and brought actual forks.
Caterina.
Because the French were clearly still sitting on the ground and just eating food with little cups and spoons from...
And bread. And she really did have a tremendous influence. It's kind of amazing. And no one taught me that at culinary school. I think that's kind of interesting. Well, you don't actually have history class in culinary school, which they should have. They really should the history and background of.
But think about it. I mean,
what are the influences on the cooking and where do they come from?
The history of food in Italy. Italy was a wealthier and more trading culture much longer before France was. It doesn't mean, I mean, you know how much I love French food, but... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is obvious that there are many more cultures blended in different parts of Italy. Italy speaks 8 languages. The cuisine, because of geography, is incredibly diverse by region, not just a little bit diverse because of weather. I mean, France, honestly, is much more homogeneous. I would say that the fight is less France versus Italy and more all the different parts of Italy are very, very different, and they have their own thing going on.
It's kind of amazing.
And there's a homogeneity to the French cooking and the organization of things in a French kitchen. And
In a single philosophy. It's
pretty
philosophy.
Succinct, but it can be because transportation is a lot easier historically. And it's also more recent. When you have 1,500, 2,000 years of tradition of cooking certain things in certain places, certain ways.
It's deep-rooted, for sure. Yeah.
It's a different thing. One of the things I thought we could do is just examine, and we can do this more in the second or the third segment, but think about how does a Frenchman approach meat, fish? What are the starches in the cuisine? What are the pastries like in the cuisine? How do they approach vegetables?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just listed that like a Frenchman. You realize that?
Yes.
Because Italians would begin with what is the produce? What is the, you know, they would list the vegetables. And if you're lucky enough to be near the sea, the fish.
Right. Oh,
and
goodness.
And then the starches, because that's how you live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then the meat when you're lucky enough to get it, because poverty shapes so many regions.
Right.
And then pastry is for special days, which is why sometimes the pastries are ridiculous. So tell me the first thing that strike you with French food, what are the first words that come to mind? What are the principles?
Mother sauces. Immediately, you think of the foundation sauces of the cooking, and you think of cooking techniques.
There is your divide right there.
Right, exactly.
Sauces and techniques.
Exactly. Because it really is.
Because in Italian food, the first things I think of are products and care.
That's not to say that French food doesn't have product and care, but I don't want to say less disciplined form of cooking, but it's just a different approach to cooking.
One of the other basic differences is the rhythm of the meal.
And what is the difference in the rhythm, would you say?
Well, the French menu, what you think of a French menu being an hors d'oeuvre, or maybe if it's a lavish meal, multiple hors d'oeuvres. It's funny, we think of hors d'oeuvres as being past things at a cocktail party, and that's not necessarily what I'm talking
about. It's their first courses, hors d'oeuvres, or what they call their first courses.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. And maybe if it's a very jazzy meal, it might be a soup, a cold hors d'oeuvre, a hot hors d'oeuvre, that kind of thing. And good examples of those kinds of dishes would be what?
If you had, say, a lobster velouté as a first course, and then you moved into, maybe you moved into an escargot and pastry course, something that would be different, and then perhaps a salad that was based on fresh vegetables.
Or a terrine or something like that.
Or a pâté, right, exactly.
I mean, classically, you're much more likely to see a terrine than you are to see a salad, right? Or a salad would be like a salad of crayfish and aspic or...
Right. True.
With golden beets and truffles or something.
Right,
you know?
Right. Something very ornate with a lot of gelatin. Right. Mm-hmm.
And then you would move to a fish course.
Mm-hmm. And then probably some sort of game bird course, and then finish with game or meat.
Yeah. That's what, if you're building a big, you know,
beef, lamb.
The whole idea of like a 7-course menu comes from, and then it would be sweet. Or cheese and sweet.
Cheese and sweet. Mm-hmm.
When you think of that fish, how is that fish dealt with? You know, like it's, but that's how a menu is built. And an Italian menu is typically the rhythm is antipasti, which is it's the first something that you have, you know, with an aperitivo, with some kind of it's sparkling wine in the region or something that's not serious, right? And for antipasti, it's always something that kind of teases. So it's either something like something a little spicy or something pickled or something salty or, you know, something preserved or crispy or crunchy. Like there's always a little bit of, but rarely a lot of starch in those kinds of things, because it makes you want, what does it make you want? It makes you want that primo, that pasta, that risotto. In some parts of Italy, it could be a polenta dish. In some parts of Italy, it could be a soup with pasta. It's very traditional in some places to have pasta fagioli, you know, literally like it's a bean soup with lots of pasta.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd either have fish or meat.
Mm-hmm.
and then you would have a sweet. And usually the cheeses, most of the time, depending upon the regions, if you're out of Piemonte and the Northwest, in almost all the regions, the cheese is going to be table cheese first. Simple stuff and part of antipasti or part of a garnish with something, and not its own course, not its own thing. And then sweet depends upon the region again. But the odds of it being, you know, like fruit in season, super high.
And antipasti is pretty much finger food, isn't it? I mean, or food you can eat with your hands, I
yeah,
feel like.
I mean, it's kind of...
It's not formal.
I think of antipasti as like, we're sitting in someone's garden,
mm-hmm.
and everyone's having a glass of bubbles, sort of sitting willy-nilly, and there are five or six plates of things set out, little bowls, dishes. You know, there's olives, there's almonds, there's these sweet roasted peppers, there's fresh cheese, there are a few crostini. That's sitting out, and maybe some salami or a type of prosciutto or whatever it might be. But it's not usually a super structured thing. Often family style, often, you know, that's...
I'm getting hungry.
Yeah. But you can feel that sunshine, you know?
Right. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you go inside and you sit at the table, and the breeze is blowing through the windows, and the big curtains are flowing in the breeze, and more serious wine is open, you know? Mm-hmm. And then you sit down, and boom, pasta's served, and you have to eat that right now while it's hot.
Gigantic bowl of pasta. You know it's going to be.
It's going to kill you, and you're going to be happy about it.
Exactly.
But you want it so much because everything was salty, and you had like two glasses of bubbles outside. And,
right. You're ready to go.
The sun got into your head a little bit, and you're like, wow, this is great. And this is it's tasty, and you just blow through the pasta, you know.
Oh, boy.
And then like a big platter of grilled fish, you know, or a big platter of, and usually some kind of pecan sauce, and that's it. Or some kind of, you know, maybe it's goat. Like roasted and all the primal cuts with like salt crusted on it in the oven, and you just basically get one of those guys to like fight with gnaw on, and
mm-hmm.
you know, and a little bit of fresh peas or something, and that's that.
Yeah,
because all you wanted after the pasta is yeah. Anyway, when we come back on Foreman & Wolf on Food and Wine, we're going to start to break down a little bit of what makes up French cooking, what makes up Italian cooking, so we can pleasantly continue this war of the minds. On Foreman & Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And you just said to me, you know what? The Chef's Challenge, this is going to be an interesting Chef's Challenge.
Exactly. Because we're going to trade.
We're going to trade. You want to flip a coin and see how you want to, how someone's got to approach the, we have the same list of goods and.
All right.
And then you got to flip a coin for approach.
Okay. We can do that.
Something like that.
That's
so we should
idea.
Have an interesting.
Yeah, the same list of products.
In the third segment, we should have a pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. Love a contest.
Ooh, yeah.
Especially against you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're not competitive with me at all. I know that.
Oh, boy.
Oh, Nelly. All mm-hmm. right. So let's have a little bit of organized thought about French versus Italian approaches to different things. So how do Frenchmen approach meat? Meat, game, birds. What is the what is a dish and how would it be approached?
Well, perfect example is Bocuse's chicken in a pig's bladder, and that's a whole bird from Bresse, which is the region where the best chickens come from in France, and it has truffle under the skin, and then it goes into the bladder and it's roasted in the oven. But it steams inside of the bladder. They actually put typically a little bit of Madeira and truffle juice and maybe a tiny little bit of stock. It's only a couple tablespoons of liquid in with the bladder, but it blows up. Literally, it looks exactly like a balloon as it roasts in the oven. So I was actually reading about it because I just had it on my trip to France, and it's the second time I've had it there. And in reading several different cookbooks with his recipe, Bocuse's recipe in for this dish, at one point he talks about how sous vide cooking, which is has been very popular for probably the last 10 years or so, that this is just basically an old form of sous vide cooking, which is right. I mean, it's something that's encased, cooked at a low temperature with moisture. And I mean, this has been done forever. And it's really impressive. I mean, you can't, when it comes out into the dining room, that is such an amazing course. So obviously,
Madame,
that's an extreme.
Your balloon.
Your balloon. We're going to end the balloon and pull out a chicken. And
we're going to stab it.
And we're going to very quickly, you know, break it down on at tableside, sauce it, veg it. And, you know, it's an amazing thing to watch. That's an extreme version of what would happen in French cooking. Obviously, that's haute cuisine. That's excellent skill. The French are very good at roasting chickens. And, you know, typically mirepoix, carrot, celery, onion.
So that dish is, I mean, it has the best chicken in it.
It does.
And it's, but it almost seems like it's about the very clever technique and the things that are done to the chicken more than about the chicken.
I think the final product is a revelation, a bit of a revelation, because the procedure is so amazing. So yes, in the end, it's an amazing procedure, an amazing cooking technique, but you did start with great products. So in the end, it's about both things.
Of course it is.
Quite truly. But when you come down to cooking just a basic roast chicken, truly is about the product.
But that's like an epiphany chicken.
Yes.
And so now, how about fish? What's a classic dish that illustrates the French kitchen's approach?
I would almost have to say poaching fish, just because that's such a very special way, and it is very particular to French cooking. And you can either do immersion poaching, where let's say it's a whole salmon and it's wrapped in cheesecloth and it goes into a courbouillon, and it's cooked on the stove, or can be slow poached in the oven with a lid on the pot, and it's very delicate and the fish is cooked all the way through, but it's very tender and beautiful. Or shallow poach, which you can do definitely on stovetop with a smaller piece of fish, where the liquid would only come up halfway up the side of the piece of fish. Shallots, white wine, butter, parchment paper over the top. Fish steams a little bit as it's in the shallow poach, and then you immediately make a sauce with that. And that is so fresh.
With the poaching liquid.
Yeah. So reduce down the poaching liquid, perhaps finish it with creme fraiche. Typically, it would actually be cream, and you would have shallots in there. You could also have fish stock or lobster stock in that shallow poach. And
what kind of fish does
I immediately
too
think
well.
Of turbo. Turbo
well,
is perfect for that.
There's an entire pan that they make for this turbotier, so you can do an entire turbo.
Mm-hmm. And then when you were asked about when you talk about meat, I think you have the braising process is probably one of the most French things, and that's so important to cooking. And all cultures do it, because when you think about food that's hundreds of years old and you're talking about feeding a lot of people, braising is using a tough piece of meat, because always all parts of the animal were used. Nothing was wasted. And braising those off cuts and making it edible and enjoyable, and in the end, sometimes outrageously good, because a braised dish can be very, very beautiful. That is something that is absolutely important to learn in French cooking technique.
And so, how about starches? What are the important starches?
Well, potatoes are used a lot, which is interesting since they don't come from France. Particularly, I think fingerling potatoes must be just love the soil in different parts of France, because they seem to be incredible there.
Quick, how many kinds of potatoes can you name French potato preparations?
Oh my gosh, a lot. Pomme souffle, pomme gratin, dauphinoise, duchesse. I mean, they're just so
Pong
many.
Pong of potatoes.
Yeah, they're just frites.
All the different cuts of frites, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all the names for the different cuts.
Exactly. Well, it's a little bit like the egg, you know, the chef's hat.
A million ways to get it done.
Right.
Yeah.
Potatoes are so versatile and again, inexpensive, so can feed a lot of people with them. And And there's some very elegant, gorgeous things you can do with potatoes, and there are things that are very rustic and fantastic as well. I think for me, potato gratin is an achievement. To cook it, to have it be the right amount of cream in the dish, not over creamed, not too much cheese. The potatoes are cooked perfectly. It is a song when it's finished. I mean, it is a beautiful song because it is so satisfying and so rich and gorgeous and velvety on your palate and all of those things that you want from a very decadent dish.
This is where I get snarky and say it's a dairy song.
And then there's the other version, which you could
it's a
do
song of the cow,
like Lyonnaise potatoes, which are, you know, basically sautéed at high heat in something like duck fat, and, you know, have caramelized onions. Potatoes are caramelized, and the onions are caramelized, and lots of pepper, and, you know, you have this very hearty thing that would be fantastic with a great roasted piece of meat.
Sort of the ultimate home fries, proper Lyonnaise. Potatoes, but bread also, right? I mean, that's, we think of bread baking in France as being a very particular.
It's a great art form, and the baguette is obviously the foundation. Boule is a foundation of their breads, and brioche is a nice little turn with a lot of egg yolk and butter in it. But baguette is so versatile, and you think of all the, you know, whether it's a crouton or a toast point or you know, what they're used for, whether it's to garnish a soup or a salad or to gratiner something, to have a little bit of buttery croutons on top of,
well,
say,
French,
a scallop
French bread
dish.
Has two jobs, right? One is to show off the unbelievable butter, and the other is to make sure that you get all of the sauce.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes. Favorite point is that you may absolutely take that piece of bread and swipe the plate with it. Awesome thing.
But then, it's funny, now pastry.
Well, they're so good at that. And, you know, again, it's the gamut. You know, when you think of mousses.
You know, like in every sort of like cartoon souffle. thought of French cooking, you think of pastry as being like the most elaborate hairdos.
Right.
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 Why is that? Why do we often think that immediately?
Height and beauty and glamour and, yeah. That's what a pastry is. Well, it's cold food. Well, often pastry is cold. And anytime you're working with cold food, you have more time to work with it, more time to work with the plate up. You're not worried about sending out a cold, hot course.
More time to manipulate.
It is. Absolutely. So it's key to pastry. And it can absolutely be a work of art if you want it to be, or it can be something as satisfying as a great chocolate mousse or a pot de crème. Or a great bowl of ice cream, which, you know, this is where we can have our little war over.
Also came from Italy.
Italy versus France on ice cream.
There would be no ice cream in France if the Italians had made it first.
You know, ice
cream. If the Sicilians had made it first.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because it came from the Arabs. So, and that other segment of, you know, that group of things we talked about as being like how does the Frenchman deal with the vegetables?
A lot of different ways. I think one that really sticks out in my mind are stuffed vegetables, which are time-consuming and are something that, because so much of the really fine cuisine in France was used on display, but grand buffets. I mean, if you go all the way to Food for the King, you know, there was so much star wow factor needed for those buffets and. Entertaining, whether the king was being entertained or he was entertaining, it was like a big show off, and so things were very, very overdone at a time where they were almost, I suspect, probably nearly inedible, but because they were so overworked, and then you come to a more realistic time where things are, you know, it's all about the taste of the product and the freshness of the product, but a lot of stuffed vegetables with a lot of detailed work, whether it's a piece of zucchini that's hollowed out, and then you use a scoop to peel down the sides to show two different colors on the outside, and then you stuff it with something like tomato that's a bright color and that has you know, chives coming out of it that have been cut on a bias, and then it's wrapped in, you know, something that's yellow, and then the sauce is, you know, another color. Maybe it's a green, like a spinach puree. Coulis is something that definitely is an American term used for the purees that were often done in France out of vegetables. And I think the elaborateness of those things was very important to their cooking. And then even if you, or if you stuffed a tomato with something, or you had eggplant that you hollowed it out and stuffed an onion with different vegetables, and definitely very good at frying vegetables for sure, and in a light batter. And I kind of immediately think of Erica Vera for some reason when I say that. Maybe a little bit of almonds on the plate with the Erica Vera, a little bit of a mayonnaise, you know, to sort of swipe through the vegetables. And tapenade. The use of tapenade with a lot of vegetables was very important as well. So Tony, for Italy, let's talk about the five areas of meat, fish, starches, vegetables, and pastry. So let's get into meat. Yeah. And birds.
When you're lucky enough, I mean, that's one of the overriding things you see in most of Italian culinary histories. You're lucky when you get meat. You know, there's a dish in Sicily that's called calf's liver. That is roasted butternut squash. That looks like the shape of calf's liver.
Wow.
Because you know what? We don't have calf's liver.
Got it.
You know, that's... I think that it's important to know that, you know, just sustenance is kind of like job one. So when you're lucky enough to have meat, it's all about whatever that product is. And it's rarely about much more than seasoning it and cooking it. And it's funny, it's like the having a good fire. I mean, the first time I ever visited Molettieri in Campania, the great Tarozzi producer, his wife Angela literally had like baskets full of lamb, like ribs, chops, all kinds of business, had this huge fire going in their cookhouse, which is outside of the kitchen. Hmm. And she's standing there holding these two, you know, what looked like almost like a shovel, but with a closed basket on the end of it. And I was standing, I walked in there and stood in there and helped her a little bit and was asking her about it. And she literally just took all this, they killed the lamb, cut it up, mm-hmm. and seasoned it with salt. And she's standing there holding the baskets in the fire.
Wow.
You know, like just and like shaking them, turning them, like it's like the most unbelievable workout sort of thing I've ever seen. But mm-hmm. but it's just from, like it's about the meat and the salt and the fire. And when that comes to the table, there's the, you know, big platters of this coming to the table. There are whole chilies on the table. And if you want, there's a cutting board and a knife. So if you want some chili for that, great. And if you want some olive oil, there's olive oil on the table, really good oil from their neighbor that they trade with. You know, like, that's the dish. We're lucky enough to have the meat. We're going to share it with you. It's a good day.
Yeah. Well,
you know, I mean, that's...
I'm sure it was amazing.
So, I mean, that's, to me, that there are lots of technical approaches that are modern, but... Historically, and the spirit behind of a lot of what got done, gets done still on a regular basis, that's how it's done.
It's a pretty good spirit.
When we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, Cindy will keep giving me a little grill work on Italy, and we'll do a chef challenge. This should be a very interesting one. All of that on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And I'm Chef Cindy Wolf.
All right, so we talked right. about meat, the joy of having meat.
Mm-hmm.
The way an Italian would deal with
is
it.
Is it time to get into fish?
Sure.
All right.
It's always time to get into fish.
We have, right? Then they have so many great ones.
Oh, but it's there are so many things. Because it's like, did you get clams? Did you get calamari? Did you get octopus? Did you get, a nice... sea bream? Did you get the branzino?
Freshwater.
Did you get, yeah, I mean, that's...
Versus saltwater fish,
there's a million different there's a million different things.
It's a lot of coast.
I was thinking about a dish that I thought typified a particular approach I had a long time ago in Sicily, where a guy had these little tiny baby calamari. And they took the beaks, and they were literally like, I was sitting having a glass of wine in a restaurant, watching a guy pull up a little boat to a dock. And he came off the boat, and it was the brother of the guy who had the restaurant. And he brought five or six different things. One of them were these little baby calamari. And so the guy said, "Do you want me to cook them?" I said, "Sure.
Please." Right.
So he went and he got like six or seven pine cones from a tree and shook out all the pinoli.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. While his brother cleaned the beaks out of the calamari.
Wow. Okay.
And then
yum.
He pan fried them. He like floured them, pan fried them, toasted the pine nuts, had these great big green olives that were really kind of bitter that were from Sicily that he had like slices of, and a whole lot of parsley, and a nice big fat, very sweet lemon. And so he pan fried these guys and then dressed them with all of that, and then put a little like chili oil that he had made from dried chilies on the table. And I had that.
Seems like a good idea.
Yeah. There's a pretty Italian approach to fish.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's again, it's like sun is shining. This is here. What a gift.
Exactly.
You know?
For sure.
And fish right out of the water, and you know, not great elaboration, but and when it hits the plate, things are very natural. You know, that's the maybe you can make it very fancy, depending upon the quality of your knife cuts and those kinds, you know, and that sort of thing, and how you arrange it. But a lot of times,
not in an overworked way, right?
No manipulation, right. No elaboration. Just
do it. Put beautiful product on the
plate. These are beautiful things, and
yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. But that's how I think of an Italian's approach to fish.
Great respect for that.
I know. Mm-hmm. I've seen you have great joy with that kind of cooking.
And then starches.
Starches, there's so many.
They're so good. Because
you live on it. And potatoes like last on the list because it only grows in a few places.
Sure.
And only a few places that the soil is not too poor or not too dry to grow them. So in the Northwest, there's flour everywhere. And so the pasta is made everywhere. In the South, where it's poorer, there's usually it's water and flour and salt. And that's a very fancy recipe,
mm-hmm.
right? And mm-hmm. and also very easy to make dried pasta that way.
Okay.
And you also have the sun and like the sea winds to dry it down there. In the north, especially, say Piemonte, or in the northeast, like Friuli, closer to the coast in the Veneto, you see pasta made with egg yolks. Sometimes just egg yolks. Sometimes whole eggs. Sometimes water and egg. Sometimes oil and water and egg, but there's the variations on the recipes. But that's what you see, all, you know, through Lombardia and just all through the north. In the center of the country, it seems like there's some egg, but it's not as rich for the most part. Once you get south of, say, Parma, and once you get south of Rome, then once you get close to Rome, and then further south, it's all the dried stuff. And I think it's just like lack of eggs in the south, and just dealing with the reality.
Mm-hmm.
And different regions have totally different traditions. They're usually three, four, five shapes, and the dishes that are classical for those shapes in a given region, like in Piemonte, really rich things like tagliarini, which are what we think of as tagliolini, a little tiny, skinny noodles, round ones, that with a great ragu, some kind of a meat ragu, and it's meat or organ meat and a little tomato product and stock, and you know that's one classical thing in Piemonte, or the filled thing in Piemonte, you know, the agnolotti, little angled guys with corners, so they're little rectangles and usually filled with something very much like that ragu, but with some bread and a little bit of cheese, probably one of the locals, and sometimes a little bit of prosciutto because that kind of seasons it up a little bit if there's like little scraps to put in there. Although the best recipe I ever had a bunch of pork liver in it.
Oh, gosh.
Which is super duper good because it's really like inherently sweet. Mm-hmm. But that's one tradition there. And you go to the south and Calabria, and like the macaronata that I watched you get a lesson in rolling this pasta out.
That was so much fun.
With this lady and her 12-year-old boy.
Yeah, who was killing.
Who was a wizard.
Julian and I
he
doing
was killing
that.
Both of you, yeah.
Well, we'd never and done it before.
But that is the pasta shape that they make. That's the one that they know,
that was really.
They make their dough.
That's
they
a
make
beautiful shape.
And, yeah. And that. But it's literally like not even on the coast. It's up in the hills of that part of Calabria, and that's it.
Talk about holding
the sauce.
That's
the one place you see it.
Yeah, that's something that really holds a sauce.
Well, but
gorgeous.
They make that shape. What's in that sauce? They have tomato, and they usually use some meat product, but they have porcini mushrooms that grow on those hills.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you have all that that flavor in that sauce. You want a shape that holds that
right
sauce.
They're lucky.
In Puglia, the shape orecchietti. That is for holding the vegetables, and if you're lucky enough to have sausage in your orecchietti preparation with the vegetables, then it's like a little cup that holds that shape. But the pasta shapes are super diverse. But in the Northeast, you'll see polenta, where corn grows well. In the North, right through the Po River Valley, you see risotto from rice. And you'll still see some rice, but not cooked like a risotto, of a different variety in the center of Italy. In Tuscany, you see that sometimes, just the riso. But it really depends on like what grows where,
sure,
what they do. But that is the backbone of, like you have not begun to eat. That's why it's called the primo. That's your first course. You can snack and fool around all you want on antipasti. You have not begun to eat until you have pasta. And if there's not something to make that second course, there's not.
Okay.
But that's starches. I think of all of those things, and then I think of bread and focaccia, and there are some interesting traditions, but there's not as much emphasis. I mean, the French are masters of very particular bread shapes, and there's excellent bread in different parts of Italy, but it's not the focus, and it's not that high art. It doesn't mean the bread's not great.
And then what about the vegetables?
Or everything. Because that's, I mean, everyone has a garden. I mean, that's if you don't live in a city, you very likely have a garden. And you're growing and cooking whatever you grow. I mean, that's, and you're pickling and you're preserving and you're saucing. And, last time I was in Vulture, in Basilicata in the mountains, visiting a winery, and there are four ladies sitting out back because the tomatoes just came, and these four ladies are making the sauce together and just like talking and gossiping. And
I was there. That was great.
Yeah, it was.
That was amazing to see those ladies.
They had 100 kilos of tomatoes.
Yeah,
That
was.
They're here. We do it.
Yeah, they were gonna feed village.
But if they got when they're really good carrots. They're going to cook some, but they're also going to put some up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big piece of whether it's pickled or whether it's jarred or like there's a tradition of like, it's funny in Puglia, the thing about you're talking about starches, probably the most famous bread is a Pugliese bread that's baked in a particular basket. And
I love that.
And one of the proverbs there is that, it's another day in purgatory for every crumb of bread you leave on your plate. For every crumb. They're so poor, and
sure.
The bread was important. That mm-hmm. you better eat every calorie that's there, because I mean someone else is being denied.
Oh my, okay.
In a Catholic country, that's tough.
Mm-hmm.
Tough talk.
Indeed. And you're ready to go to pastry?
Yeah, I think of pastry as being, besides the whole separate world of Neapolitan pastry, pastry is, again, it's about product. So if you're in the Northwest, it's going to be probably dairy and probably eggs. That's the one place that you see panna cotta and that sort of thing. A lot of the rest of Italy, it's about whatever fruit is in season or whatever fruit you put up. And then chocolate is a special occasion thing. It might be part of something once in a while. And candies are something that are made a lot.
Yeah, it seems like cookies, too.
Cookies are made a lot. Yeah. And lots of, like, pastry is meant to be sweet. So things are like crumbly, a little like, and it's funny, the further south you go, the sweeter they get too. You know, that's something that, as I think through the culinary map of Italy, I can think of like one pastry or cookie or sweet, you know, in every region that is like the thing that gets to me. And gelato, you think about in all of Italy, but that was very, very southern tradition. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the chef's challenge.
Here we go.
What we've done is write down a bunch of ingredients, and do you want to look at them first?
Sure.
And do you want to approach them as a French chef or as an Italian, the way you think an Italian chef would approach them?
I'm going to do Italian.
Oh, that gives me the French default.
That's right.
Okay.
I think that's the way it should be.
All right.
Okay, so cherry tomatoes, this is Tony's list, fresh polenta, 2 guinea fowl, 6 lemons, buckwheat flour, fresh rosemary, and fresh celery, minus scallops, crawfish, artichokes, girolle, and morels, baby lamb rack, and escargot.
It's a protein-heavy list. An Italian would not know what to do with that.
I think that I'll combine the scallops and the crawfish with the artichokes and the cherry tomatoes and the lemons, some of the lemon, and make a wonderful antipasta. So just lay it out on a big platter and have the, I'll sear the scallops and actually have them cold on the platter. Crawfish laid out, artichokes, just the bottom part of the artichoke poached and tossed in extra virgin olive oil, lemon, and I'm going to assume we have pantries, but you have rosemary here. I'll put a little bit, rosemary's a little, I would rather have basil, but a little bit of rosemary on, and maybe even a little sea salt, and have the cherry tomatoes tossed in the same vinaigrette, extra virgin rosemary, salt and pepper, and just drizzle that all over the platter, and that should be a great, bright, fresh way to start, and then move into...
That's a nice antipasti.
Thank you. And then move into the guinea fowl, which is great. Just roast those beautifully. I'll keep some of that lemon and put it in the cavity, some of the rosemary, and let that roast until it's golden and gorgeous. And then go ahead and break it down. And buckwheat flour, I'll make a little pasta from buckwheat flour. So with the guinea fowl, I think if I had some very pretty, almost like a linguine shape, I could cook that and nest it with some of the escargot, which I think would be very unusual to have with a guinea fowl and kind of cool.
I'm going to butt in. Your mushrooms and escargot with buckwheat flour would make an awesome pasta course.
Okay. And not the escargot, you mean?
No, the escargot and the mushrooms.
Okay, yeah. So we'll add the mushrooms then. and then what I'm left with is, did I do it all? Oh, the lamb. So the lamb rack, just a very young, tender lamb rack. Go ahead and put that over a wood grill. And I guess I have celery left. So I'm going to just do a little bit of braised celery. So I'll braise it in a little bit of wine and herbs and maybe even a little bit of olive oil and just have sort of finger length pieces that I can lay out on the bottom of the plate and lay the chops on top and drizzle a little bit of extra virgin olive oil on that and call it a day.
Very good. All right. Let me see this list.
All right, here you go.
Yeah, all I'm doing is like thinking about all
the Italian things I want to do
with the product. Yeah. Figure out how to preserve some of that protein because you wouldn't serve it on all on the same menu. So a hot hors d'oeuvre, a cold hors d'oeuvre, a fish course, a meat course. What would I do? The guinea fowl, I would use the guinea fowl and the girolle to work on a terrine and make a terrine that has aspic around it is what I really like to do with the guinea fowl. That, you know, assuming again that there's pantry and there's some things that you would have in a kit. There's nowhere near enough stuff for a French guy to work with this stuff. You know, you'd have to have stock around and all that kind of business. But yeah, I'd love to serve a slice of that guinea fowl terrine with some of that celery, very very lightly pickled, and the cherry tomatoes, same way. As a cold hors d'oeuvre. Mm-hmm. For a hot hors d'oeuvre, yeah, the crawfish and scallops are both so sweet. And artichokes are a little bitter, but that's kind of that's a fun combination. I would like to do just a quick fricassee of the artichokes and poach the scallops and the crawfish, and you have to have a cream sauce or a butter sauce, right?
Sounds good to me.
I mean, that's the crawfish shells to make a little stock, and then finish that with creme fraiche, so you have your sauce, so you can nappe over your seafood, and you have your little pickled guys to garnish, and I think that should be nice. The meat course. Let's see. There's escargot to play with. I guess escargot you could have passed as an amuse-bouche, you know, amuse-gueule, the little first teaser. I wrap those guys in pastry with a little bit of like butter poached garlic and just a little tiny bit to get some perfume in there. And fresh parsley if it's out in the garden somewhere. And have those. And, of course, form the pastry in the shape of a snail shell, right? What self-respecting French chef wouldn't do that, right? Mm-hmm. So then you have those to pass to everyone, right?
Sure.
Yeah. And then main course, you have the lamb rack. So you have lamb rack with rosemary, which is a great combination. The polenta, a Frenchman would never eat.
Right.
You know, that's sort of one of the reasons I threw it on that list. But lemon and rosemary for the lamb rack makes sense. And the mushrooms, yeah. Morels and giroles. What I'm missing that potato that you need.
Oh, you have it in your pantry.
That's so, because I think you have to make...
We only have 12 ingredients, so
yeah, no,
you have
I know.
To have a little pantry.
I think you need
it.
To make parmesana and garnish that parmesana with, with the fricassee of the giroles and the morels. As the dish that goes alongside the lamb rack with the...
There you go.
And the lamb rack, you have to roast and, rub it down really well with the rosemary and salt and black pepper and roast that. So there's a chop sliced out, laid out. And I guess, what tricky thing could we do with the lemons? That's the question for the garnish. And I guess that...
You could make sorbet.
You could fry lemon slices and fresh celery. I think as a garnish for that lamb rack. So, well, kind of a different approach.
Yeah, it's fun.
Well, I think that's all we have time for. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media.
You can follow me on Twitter at Chef Cindy Wolf or on Instagram at Chef Wolf.
And if you want to download this or any other programs, go to WYPR's website, WYPR.org. Look up the Foreman Wolf page and look for the various podcasts of this program and a good number of others. If you want to email us, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org. Thanks for listening.
And have a great Sunday.